What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Strands. Of course, he covers the team for The Athletic as well. He's on the road doing so as we speak in Washington, where the Canucks are going to take on the Capitals later today. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drance?
Third time's a charm, and I'm very confident.
Look at this.
Today is going to be our best remote show.
This sounds great. I can see you. The lips are moving in sync with what I'm hearing. The audio, it's incredible. Everything is clicking. Everything is clicking today.
It's very exciting. Bye. We are in sync.
That's right. Big show today. I'm glad as well, because, of course, always a big show on a Wednesday. We'll do the crossover with Donnie and Dolly, Don Taylor, Rick Dollywall, in just a few minutes here to get the show started. And then, of course, we'll talk to our pal Jason Buchla at 1 o'clock, and lots to get into in the crossover and with Books. I mean, it's a very newsy 24 hours or so for the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm not even talking about the incredible churning of the rumor mill and like the list of national insiders I have bullet pointed in the broadsheet section of the whiteboard is pretty significant, but I mean actual tangible news, right? In addition to this being a game day against the Washington Capitals and, you know, Alex Ovechkin chasing Wayne Gretzky's record, that's a big storyline. A couple of interesting tidbits, or one interesting tidbit from yesterday, the Young Stars tournament in Penticton is at least temporarily no more. The Canucks announcing a partnership with the Seattle Kraken to play a kind of a set of games. Go ahead.
I've got some insight into that. So Ken Holland is from Vernon, British Columbia, and obviously was the architect of the Traverse City tournament. And when he was hired, you know, right during that 2019-20 season, the tournament began to build momentum to come back. And that was because Ken Holland went to work in partnership with the Canucks, who loved the tournament, right? Like, this is when this tournament goes away, it's never the Canucks. The Canucks want this tournament. They love Penticton. They love the facility. It's turnkey for them, right? Like, everything about it works for Vancouver, and Vancouver wanted to put it on again. But the presence of Ken Holland loomed large in bringing the tournament back for the sort of 5 year, or I guess it would have been a 5 year run if not for COVID interruptions. I guess it was a 3.5 year run of awesome Penticton Young Stars tournaments. And, you know, with Ken Holland out in Edmonton, you had that same old sort of herding cats thing. Again, the Canucks never want to not do this tournament. The Canucks will probably try again to do this tournament in the future on the other side of this 2 year agreement with the Seattle Kraken. But looked like Edmonton sort of started it, and then Calgary kind of followed suit. And soon enough, the Canucks were finding a different plan with the Seattle Kraken. I think there was some consideration of hosting one of the games in Penticton, but ultimately Abbotsford's a building, you know, that the franchise owns and controls and has an interest in promoting. So looks like there'll be those pair of prospect games, an I-5 series against the Seattle Kraken, which sucks. The Penticton Young Stars tournament, truly one of the great events. The great preseason events in Western Canadian hockey. It's been an awesome fixture across the last 15 years, and I hope we haven't seen the last of it. Hopefully at some point the Alberta teams, you know, recommit and do it again. I'd imagine they'll do Banff, and look, maybe it makes sense to have a sort of a more disparate approach to these preseason tournaments, but I think a lot of players, a lot of scouts, a lot of staff, a lot of teams have gotten a lot of value out of Penticton. And so hopefully the club returns, hopefully the tournament returns. I know that the Canucks love being in the interior, have loved working with the city and sort of getting to interact with fans in the interior there. So fingers crossed that this isn't the last of it, but that's sort of how it all went down.
And I mean, if anything, I'd like to see a more centralized approach across the NHL to the preseason prospects tournaments, right? Instead of it being this kind of ad hoc teams agreeing and, oh, it goes away and then it's back. I'd like to see a more standardized, get more teams involved in one locations and build them up a little bit. Like, I don't know about full blown NBA summer league, but at least trending in that direction. So it's more standardized and bigger events.
Well, you should consider it, too, in a world where you're going to a decentralized draft. I mean, one thing that the league is going to miss, right? Because you go to the draft and it's like the NHL head coaches hold their charity golf tournament and there's crucial meetings that take place there, right? There's a ton of business that takes place at the draft, and not just trades because everyone's in the same location, but like key contract talks, right? It wasn't a coincidence that Nikita Zadorov and that, you know, the highest profile free agents tend to be at the draft, right? Like players get, I mean, I remember Vinny LeCavalier got bought out, right? And then there was like a Manhattan hotel and teams scrambling to get meetings with Vinny LeCavalier. And that was what, 2013, right? The amount of work that gets done at the draft, the fact that like the Equipment Trainers Association holds sort of their awards and stuff around the NHL draft. Like there's a convention service for the industry that the draft provides that, you know, I think will be sorely missed by everybody, right? Out of work coaches hanging out and taking meetings with teams to catch on in the American League and on and on, right? I mean, that's the sort of stuff you see regularly during draft week. The league's going to miss that with a decentralized approach without question. And I do think something like a summer league, I mean, for example, you've got these development team or summer development camp approaches across the league. And you've got facilities where you could have, you know, a Western Conference one and an Eastern Conference one and sort of line it up and pool costs, you know, and I mean, it would probably reduce the burden for some teams that struggle to monetize a development camp, right? You could create a revenue stream, you could create a TV product, you could hold a convention service. I mean, the league really does need to think about how they're doing, whether it's development camp or rookie tournaments, I think in the context of what they lose when the draft goes away.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So hopefully, as you said, that the tournament comes back in Penticton at some point, but at least for the next couple of years, it'll be this series of two prospect games a year with the Seattle Kraken. The other piece of news from earlier today, Philip Hronek assigned to Abbotsford for conditioning, and an interesting one. I don't know that we got the sense he was super close. Have you heard anything about this? What's your read on what this tells us about Hronek and when he might be available for the Canucks?
Well, you know, the going down to Abbotsford comes like going on conditioning loan, right? In which you sort of remain on the roster and there's a set way of doing it. Comes with an expiry date. I think it's slightly under a week. It's a certain amount of games. And it can be extended with sort of permission from both the team and obviously the league itself, because the league doesn't want teams to utilize this, you know, in that sort of like Wade Redden capacity or what have you, or to bury a guy in the American League. So I hadn't heard about this. I hadn't caught wind of this beforehand. It's obviously a very good sign of progress. The team has a super condensed schedule. I wouldn't expect there to be much practice time.
Yeah.
So I wonder if part of what they're looking at here, you know, is not like Philip Hronek's going to play back-to-backs in Abbotsford or be a fixture in the Abbotsford Canucks lineup, but he can get some more practice time, sort of get up to speed with the American League team, maybe toward the end of his conditioning loan, get a game in, and then maybe return and skate with his teammates for a bit. You know, we've known that he's been skating, but I would still like, I think what's surprising about this is that we haven't seen him with his teammates, right? I mean, usually before you return to action, we have that old rule, right? You're 10 days to a week away once you return to practice in a sort of non-contact jersey. So I think that's what's surprising about this is we haven't seen him practice, which suggests to me strongly that that's a primary motivation of why he's going down, especially given that, you know, aside from like Monday in Winnipeg, I don't see an obvious, you know, full go practice day on the Canucks schedule for a little bit here, given how frequently they're playing games over the balance of this month.
All right, we've got a couple of guests to bring on here, and I understand they're getting a little impatient with us. So without further ado, without further delay, we will go to Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They're the hosts of Donnie and Dhali, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV, and they join us now, as they do every Wednesday, for the crossover. Happy New Year, fellas. How's it going?
Happy New Year, guys. Very well. Very well today.
Really good.
We were discussing the Canucks record, and Rick was wondering how many games above 500 they are. Anyway,
I'm not getting into it.
It was
do not start Drance on this topic. All right, we're going to do the whole crossover on this.
Oh,
if we go down this road with Drance, we don't want that. I want to start with you know, we'll get to the Pettersson, Miller, all that stuff, but I want to start on Rick Tocchet. I know he was the subject of your poll question for your show today. Does he deserve a contract extension from the Canucks? And of course, this comes partly, and you know, Pierre LeBrun is reporting that the status after this year is maybe kind of a mutual option where Rick Tocchet has a say in it. And I got to be honest, my kind of reaction to the question is I'm not sure if the most interesting part of it to me is whether he deserves an extension. The most interesting thing to me is, what does Tocchet think? Does Tocchet want to be back if he has a mutual option? Because he's only a year removed from winning the Jack Adams Trophy. You got to think he'd have other options if he decided to explore what was out there. So, yeah, the Canucks have to decide if they want to give him an extension. But I think the Tocchet side of this is pretty fascinating as well.
Well, it is in large part because, you know, a lot of success last year and the Adams Award, which historically, and Thomas, you know, this means nothing when you look at, you know, you win the Adams Award and then you're bound to get fired within less than 2 years. But does he look like he's having fun right now, guys?
No.
You know, and after games, before games, shorter answers certainly than last year. Just doesn't look like he's having a whole lot of fun. So yeah, that's a valid question. Does he want to return, especially if he gets another offer, or maybe he wants to go back to TNT? You know, like, I mean, if you're not having fun at this point in your life, you know, like, who knows? And everything's happened so quickly. I would think he would want to stay coaching, but it just happened so quickly. So why? Maybe not. Maybe a quick decision, as in, I don't want to be here anymore.
And Jamie, if it's the other side and the Canucks don't pick up the option and they say we don't want him back, well, that's a bad look on them because they got rid of Bruce Boudreau. They bring in their guy, and you would expect he would be here a whole lot longer than just, what has he been, the year and a half or two years or whatever it's been. Every single thing went right for Tocchet last year, and everything has gone wrong. The numerous injuries, and we're not talking injuries to the third pair, fourth line. We're talking Hughes, Pettersson, Aronik, Joshua, Demko, the, you know, Besser, seven games. The star players. He's getting injuries to the star players, not the, you know, third or fourth liners or the third pair. He's also got to deal with two star players not getting along. He's got to deal with a GM who went out and did an article, and now they're the talk of the NHL because they might trade one or two of the star players. He's had to deal with an incredible amount of outside noise. And here's the other one for you guys. 10 UFAs last year, 6-7 new players. The GM didn't hand him the same team that took Edmonton to seven games last year in round two. The GM handed him a training camp roster with 6-7 new guys, and it took him a while to get going, and then the injuries mounted. Yeah, Donnie nailed it. He doesn't look like he's having a ton of fun. The body language, some interviews have been short, some comments have been terse, and it's just totally opposite of last year.
Yeah, and the other thing, guys, and Thomas, you know this, when you hear him talk, I sometimes get the feeling that forget about the injuries for a second, because no matter who's there, you want players who are professional hockey players to listen to you if you're the head coach. And I'm just wondering if they're listening to what he's saying, which they seem to be doing last year. I mean, he used the phrase the other day, meeting pressure with pressure, which we haven't heard a lot of. And then he's talking about things that they're not doing in front of the net, like, you know, boxing players out and things like that. And you didn't hear a lot of that last year. Everything was positive. Everything was there. It seemed like they were listening to him. And I'm wondering if he's wondering if these guys are listening to him or not, whether they're injured or not. And it just must be a really frustrating situation for him, you know, on top of all the injuries.
I think it's fascinating too, gentlemen, that last year when things went poorly, you know, he seemed upbeat, but he'd be frank with us about the team's performance. You know, I think you can notice like there's been a little bit more defensiveness. And I don't mean that in a negative way or to criticize Tocchet. I mean it purely from a what it tells us to sort of read between the lines. But he feels like he's been defending the team a little bit more, right? A mid-performance from this team will be met instead with him saying, you know, we picked up the 2 points, you like that, but, right, these are all the areas we need to get better with, like, yeah, you know, like, a little bit more of that it's a hard league to win in style sort of justification. It just, I feel like we've had a little bit less straight talk from him, just generally. And yeah, look, I think that's completely fair to note. There's been a change in his communication style with the media a little bit, although I had a very good chat with him today, mostly about Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions after his scrum. He seemed to be in good spirits. But, you know, I do think there's been a change there for sure. And look, you can totally understand. Like last year, all of the following six players were available for all 82 games, although three of them skipped game 82. And it was Garland, Hronek, Hughes, JT Miller, Brock Besser, and Elias Pettersson. All six of those guys were available for all 82 games. The list of players that have been available for all 39 Canucks games this season is Jake DeBrusk, Connor Garland, and then it's like Danton Heinen,
Sherwood,
Teddy Bluger, Myers, and Soucy, and Sherwood. Yeah. Right? So it's, I mean, there's a pretty significant gap there in terms of who makes a difference between you winning and losing on a night-to-night basis. I do think that that's kind of fundamentally compromise what this Canucks team looks like and feels like. And, you know, I think one thing that this team has not consistently had that they had last year was the mentality, right? That mentality, like, you knew what Canucks hockey looked like night to night from an effort standpoint last season. I don't think you've got that this year. You can totally understand why that would frustrate a head coach. I would note, though, that I think the team has kind of found it a little bit more lately. They just haven't had the juice for it to really matter results-wise. And then, you know, the other part of it is, in addition to that, this team had this level that they hit where it felt like that aggression and discipline was put to good use in terms of how thoughtfully they played, how everything seemed intentional in terms of, you know, the way that they dominated offensive zone possession and how they use that to defend and protect their defenders who maybe aren't the fastest from getting attacked off the rush, and sort of the way that they attack teams as a five-man unit at the top of the lineup. I don't know if it's because of injuries or because they wanted to become a more rush attacking team, but built sort of a throwback old school defense that struggles to move the puck, and it's sort of two competing thoughts. You know, I don't know exactly why they've sort of lost that, but the mentality hasn't been very consistent over the course of this year. I don't know that that's on target, especially given the volume of sort of reports that we're hearing about, you know, this core group and how the organization might feel about sort of committing to them or remaining committed to them. And then also, you know, I don't know that next level where this team's sort of aggression and mentality is also deployed thoughtfully, right? And achieves hockey goals, that next level stuff that this team had next year that just feels absent when we watch this team play at the moment.
Yeah.
And Rick,
well, I think those comparisons to last year. So sorry, Jim, if
yeah,
I
go ahead.
Say one thing too, when it comes to, last year, what we saw a lot of, and Rick Tocchet has talked a lot about this more last year because it was happening. When you have injuries or when you're in a tough situation, like it seems like you're going to blow a lead, which they've done a lot of this season versus last season. I don't know what the numbers say, but or when you're just not feeling it, they overcame those sort of things last year.
They did.
And you just haven't seen it this year. It's got to be really frustrating. Why was it there for an extended amount of time last season into the playoffs, and it just hasn't been there? When they're off this year, and they don't recover. And last year they were able to recover from moments like that, from games like that, when you're not feeling it, and it's just not there. I think right now the sense I get, which we talked to earlier about him not having fun, I think he kind of feels helpless almost. Yeah. Like, why was it there last year, and just in a short period of time after he wins the Adams Award, and they have that success, it's not there. Sorry, James.
Why did we have it on Tuesday and we don't have it tonight on Thursday?
Yeah.
And we're going to have it again on Saturday and then we don't have it again on Monday. Like, what's going on? Like, can you imagine? That would drive me nuts.
I want to come back to something you said, Rick, which was like, how does it look for management if they decide to move on from Tocchet after, you know, going through what they went through to get him in and move Boudreau out? I think it's a good point. And I'm sure you guys have started to hear from maybe a vocal minority of listeners saying, oh, Tocchet's got to go. He's the problem. Yeah. We get it in our inbox for sure. And I just, as yep. soon as I hear yep. that, before we even get into trying to evaluate the job that Rick Tocchet has done, if you bring in a new coach and you still have Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Besser, Thatcher Demko here, that's their fourth coach in like 4 years.
Yep.
Travis Green started the 2021 yep. season. You're going to give these guys four coaches in four plus seasons?
Yeah.
That's wild to me. So even if you think there's fair criticism, and of course there's fair criticism of Tocchet, it's a tough job. There's always going to be things he could do differently. Mm-hmm. But man, if you're cycling through coaches at that rate with the same core group of guys,
not good.
Then you got to look to the players at a certain point and not coaching changes always.
Well, and especially with the way they ousted Boudreaux too, I mean, which wasn't great. Well, Donnie, you brought it up on the show. It wasn't great with the way they ousted Boudreaux. But Tocchet, look, here's the thing, guys. He's got some pretty good excuses. I mean, you're taking Pettersson, Hronek, Joshua, Demko, Hughes out of his lineup. Was Demko not one of the major reasons why the Canucks were great last year? Yeah. Has he played as many games as he has played last year? Not a chance. Not a chance. He had to go... Yeah, and he had to go till December to get his number one goaltender back. So, I mean, the guy's just not in the same boat.
And now he's out again.
Now he's out again. Yeah, well, that's a whole new ball of wax.
If I told you before the season, Rick, Demko would have played seven games by mid-January, right? JT Miller would have gone 2 months without scoring and would have taken a 10-game personal leave, which was never explained. Right, that Brock Besser would have sustained a concussion and it would have taken him out of the lineup for seven games, and then he wouldn't, you know, it would take him an additional couple weeks to look like himself, that Filip Hronek would miss 2 months, and that the club would go through a difficult stretch in the first half of the season in which Pettersson and Hughes miss five games concurrently. But at the end of it, they're still in a playoff spot. Would you have said, that sounds like they're fine? Like, that sounds like... Would you have said, sounds like Rick Tocchet lost the plot? Or would you have said, hey, you know, all things considered, given the nightmare scenario you just outlined, that the fact that they're in a playoff spot seems like decent work, structurally anyway, even if it hasn't been
They
fun
are
to
in
watch
a playoff
tonight.
Spot.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I will say this. I think when you talk to most people, given all the negativity surrounding the Canucks this year, when you tell people who maybe hadn't looked at the standings over the last 48 hours or whatever the case may be, oh, by the way, the Canucks are holding on to that second wild card spot. They're in the playoffs. They'd be like, what? Mm. Really?
Yep.
I'll say this. Maybe you could argue that Tocchet's done a great job just from that, or does it say more about the Western Conference?
Well, the schedule gets tough now, Donnie. Yeah. And something the Canucks are not doing that they did last year was get on a lot of winning streaks. Not seeing it. They're take a look. Minnesota, four straight. Dallas, five straight. Vegas, three straight. Edmonton, four straight. LA, four straight. Every team above them is on a winning streak, and these guys can't get on a winning streak. Now their next four opponents are top 10 teams in the NHL. The three teams ahead of them in their division our top seven teams in the NHL. I mean, the path and the road. I'm really interested to see where this team is at the end of January. I really am, because the schedule gets a whole lot tougher.
So let's talk about the other big story, of course, which refuses to really die down, and that's Miller and Pettersson. And at this point, started with what's going on between the two of them, but I think it's kind of evolved past that now to, well, what does the team think of these players, and are they actually going to pull the trigger and do something? And my inclination is to look at it and say it would be it's so rare to see these types of players on these types of deals moved in season in the NHL. I'm pretty skeptical that it's actually going to happen, but then you keep hearing national reporters say, oh, no, don't rule it out. They're serious about it. They're seriously considering it. Rick, what's the latest? Should we be taking this seriously, the possibility of the Canucks trading one or both of Elias Pettersson and JT Miller?
Absolutely. They're listening. That's why, Jamie. And I was told last night a lot of teams are investigating. There's a lot of groundwork being done. Teams are trying to figure out what a trade for Pettersson would look like. And one of the things teams are wondering is, are the Canucks going to ask for something like Buffalo got in a trade for Eichel? They got Peyton Krebs, Alex Tuck, first and a second. teams are trying to feel out Vancouver and think, is that the type of package you guys would want back? I'm still not hearing the Canucks are asking. They're at the listening stage. But one team I was told, Columbus, big-time interest in Pettersson. They've got the young players, the young centermen, and the draft picks to pull that off. They do. They do. They could pull it off, including one of the kids, you know, from Port Moody, Kent Johnson. I'm not saying that he would be in it, but I'm just saying they got good young centermen that could help. And the reason the Canucks are looking for centermen is because they got nothing in Abbotsford, and they got no prospects. And this whole dynamic, imagine this, guys. If the Canucks would have taken Zach Benson instead of Willander, it would have changed the... Yeah, it would have changed the dynamics of what they're looking for Pettersson and Miller, because the in-house young center stud would be in the system.
Wouldn't have Willander.
Have you seen what Zach Benson's done?
Pretty sure Benson's,
since he got drafted,
pretty sure Benson's a winger, no? Did they move him to center?
No, he's center. He plays both. Thomas, am I not right?
Yeah, he plays wing in Buffalo, but I always thought he could play center. He's got the competitive to do it, yeah.
No, he has played center. He has played center. Yeah, he has played center, so I'm not going to say that. But that guy was a guy that they were looking at hard, and they pick Willander over him. But teams are still doing their due diligence, guys, on the Miller-Pettersson relationship. Teams don't want a bad apple in their dressing room. And I'm sure a lot of current and former Canuck executives are getting calls from teams right now asking about the Miller-Pettersson feud, trying to get insight, because nobody wants to add what they think is a problem to their dressing room. And the other thing I'm going to tell you, the funny thing is, we might go through this entire process up till the trade deadline, and these two guys might not get traded. There might be millions of trees that get killed talking about these two deals, and they might not get done.
You mean articles written
articles or whatever
in 1978 when paper was used.
You know what I'm talking about.
And a lot of people criticize us in the media. There you go. That's better. But the thing is that this story keeps adding new chapters. And I think the real stunning thing over the last few days, is Brad Richardson, who was here, in 1983?
Yes.
Talking about how far back this goes, right? Right. So, we're just building, on this new chapter. Pardon me? Yeah, to have one line with Tiger Woods. So this goes back a long, long way, and they gotta do something about it. It just keeps going on and on, and we keep getting criticized for bringing it up, and yet, you know, like the story keeps building.
And the GM lit this fire. It was really quiet with Pettersson and Miller. I think we went a whole week to 10 days with nothing, and then the GM ripped the player, and then it restarted. Now it's a league-wide thing. It was in the media, and I'm really glad Brad Richardson came out and said that, because that's for the crowd that blames us and says, you guys make crap up, and you guys are the ones that, you know, start all this crap. There's nothing with Miller and Pettersson. I'm so happy Brad Richardson did that, because you know what? That's for the crowd that loves to blame the media. You know what?
It's all about us.
No, but this goes back to Travis Green, and we've heard stuff going way back. It was never made up. There was always something there, and good on Brad Richardson.
The never-ending story aspect of this is fascinating, right? Yeah. Because you're right that Patrick Alvin, in some ways, really instigated the conversation. But also, you know, if you're in a posture, right? If you're in a posture where you're gauging market value and listening around the league, that's a conversation that necessarily has to involve a lot of parties, right? And what happens when you're having a lot of conversations with a lot of different parties? There's a higher probability of leaks, right? The conversation has a larger surface area internally, and there's more people that are going to talk about it. There's more information that's going to get out. So on some level, you know, while this story remains vaporous and ceaseless, right? We're truly a luck dragon away from a never-ending story here, Donnie.
Thomas, have you watched our show? We don't know these words. Come on.
Quit using these words.
Like, stop it.
Like, you went to Harvard, and you just want to show off using these words all the time. Look, Donnie and I barely got past
You haven't
12.
Seen a never-ending story? I'm referencing like an early 90s children's movie, and you're bringing up Harvard. This is more Langara, my friend.
just talk like we're in a bar talking sports.
Oh, you don't make never-ending story references in the bar?
I've been in a bar and talked sports with Drantz, and it sounds exactly like this, I gotta say. So yeah, it's pretty much identical.
Thank you.
Anyway.
I interrupted. Sorry, I do that a lot.
I'm just saying, if the team really is in a posture here where they're listening around the league and having some preliminary conversations gauging market value, it makes sense that we'd be under a torrent of national media reports as teams, you know, sort of try and get a sense of how real this is and sort of, you know, have their own conversations with various reporters and do their own due diligence and on and on. So, you know, not only does it feel like this story is not going away, or is real, but it's not going away, right? Like this is probably here to stay between now and the deadline, whether something happens or not, whether the Canucks get winning or not.
All right, we'll leave it.
You know what? I was going to say we've all been around for. As I interrupt again, we've all been around for a long time. Where there's smoke, there's fire, right? I mean, Gretzky's getting traded from Edmonton. No change. I mean, there's something here, and it's on us to talk about it.
And it's funny that national media is saying the Canucks are serious about Pettersson, yet, you know, a lot of people are hearing they're not, and teams are actually saying that they think Miller's more available than Pettersson, but it was leaked out to national media yesterday that they are very serious about trading Pettersson. It's funny the way it works. It's funny. It really, really is funny the way it works.
It is funny. I agree with you. But it's interesting, too, at least some of the time. Sometimes it gets a little much. All right. We'll let you guys go. We got you late. Thanks for the time.
Thanks,
as always, this was a blast. Look forward to doing it next week.
Beautiful.
That is Don Taylor.
Thanks, gentlemen.
And Rick Dhaliwal. Of course, they co-host together, Donnie and Dolly, on Check TV Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. And they joined us for the crossover, as they always do on Wednesdays. We'll take a break here. It is a Canucks game day. Maybe we'll play some Rick Talkett audio in the next segment, or we can just dive into the game ourselves. We'll see. We're open. We're flexible here. And then Jason Buchla will join us at 1 o'clock here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks continue their road trip tonight in Washington against Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals. 4:30 start time, which means Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah will be on immediately following our show with Canucks Central, leading in to the pregame show for the game. And it was a light optional skate for the Canucks today in Washington. But Rick Talkett spoke to the media afterwards. Let's hear from the Canucks head coach.
Can you tell us about your lineup tonight? Pretty light optional out there. Is Pettersson back this evening?
So I'll talk to Petey after skating again today. So it's a game time. At this point with players, it's how he feels. Like, you know, you get the doctors and people, hey, whatever, and then it's up to the player if he feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we're at. So I'll talk to him after the skate.
So possible option tonight, starter?
Lance will go tonight. Mm-hmm. But Demmer's close. Like, he's felt good last practice, so he's really close.
Lankinen didn't take the optional skate. I'm not used to seeing that. Is that just to manage a guy's workload, given some of the uncertainty around Demko and how condensed your schedule is?
Yes. I think it's important, especially at this time of year. You don't need to go on the ice, you know, three times in 2 days. So, and Lanks is a veteran guy in the sense that he knows what he needs.
Any other changes? I mean, we saw, like, Derek Forbert took a tough hit in the knee, for example, in that Montreal game. Are there any other sort of
He's a game time again, see how he feels. And then whether it's Briz or I'm as a Brant's to go in for him. It'll make it's like a game time. So a couple banged up guys.
We didn't ask in Montreal, but I probably should have.
Sure.
The Nils Höglander penalty.
Yeah.
And he's been playing better for you, producing. He has the nice pass in that game to get you guys on the board. But, you know, in that moment,
yeah.
How do you react to that? And how do you sort of work with a younger guy on being more disciplined in a moment like that?
Yeah, I think when at first he had his hands kind of over Hudson, mm-hmm. I'm not sure it was a penalty, but it was close. It's high alert time. Mm-hmm. I think as a player at that point, you can't do the next egregious thing.
Right.
And, you know, I think he just, whether it's, I don't know if it's a call or not. At that point, you did two indiscretions, whether that's soft or not, the ref's going to go, hey. So I don't blame the ref at that point. But saying that, it's a learning lesson for Hoggy. Hoggy, who broke his stick or lost his stick, now has to switch with the other winger. So he should be on the side where the bench is.
Right.
Instead of saying the weak side. Now, this is stuff that you try to, you know, we've talked about it, and this is where you're under pressure. So Hoggy should have replaced, I think, I forget the other winger was, should have switched. So now you have Hoggy on the strong side. So now when the puck is there.
He's got a shot to get a stick.
Or go to the bench. Get a stick and be either change. So I think that's the, you know, the penalty, yeah, can't take it. But to me, is no one. Switch with a guy under pressure, anything, that's really what it comes down to. So next time it happens, hopefully he knows to do that.
Just a big picture question for you. Last season, when things were going so well for your group, you know, you sort of keep pushing to elevate the standard and maintain that consistency. Obviously, this season's unfolded differently, whether it's because of outside noise or all the injuries that you've had to deal with and a different lineup card every night.
Yeah.
How much has your approach had to evolve over the course of this season versus what you were able to do in sort of building this when you first came in and then maintaining it through last year?
Well, I think I got to stay calm. And, you know, I think sometimes when you come to a situation, like, you know, we're making some mistakes. I mean, last game, they had 6 shots halfway through the game. We didn't get a puck in deep. And then we made, before the goal, about 9 mistakes. So my point is, we didn't do that last year. So now it's my job to figure, why are we making those mistakes? Is it because of the injuries? Is it communication with the coaches and the players? Is it some guys are panicking right now? Some guys, there's a lot of different factors, but the fact of the matter is, 10 minutes left, it's 6 shots, and all of a sudden after that play, we start to unravel. And I think that was the message today, is you got to be able to hang in there if somebody makes a mistake. And I think right now we're getting a little bit out of sorts. And whether it's lineup changes, I don't know, but you still, as a guy, and it's the old Bill Belichick, make sure you just do your job if there's a mistake. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
A big picture one for you, too. You played with Wayne Gretzky and against Wayne Gretzky. You coached against Ovi. How can you explain how different, like, obviously he's chasing this record, but Gretzky wasn't a goal scorer. This guy is. How can you explain how different they are as players and how different the game is from then to now?
Well, just being an assistant coach those years when we had those great playoff series with Washington, you might be able to shut him down for a bit, but then he'd run your defense or he'd hit somebody with a great – he could do something else than another score. Like Wayne. Like Wayne could score, pass. He was always a threat. Ovi's the same way, but when Ovi's – say you've done a good job of shutting him down for a period or two, if you look on the score sheet, he's run 4 guys. And then all of a sudden, the third period, D go back for it. They're a little hesitant. Now who's going to get the puck? Washington, and now he gets his goal. So that's what amazes me about him, is his aggressiveness. You know, people, he's a great goal scorer, but this guy's made some big hits in his career. That's loosened up those goals. That's why he gets those goals, because the next thing you know, the D are not going as hard, and they lose them, and then he gets those slot shots, or I don't know, he scores a million shots around the net, too, because he's not afraid to go in front of the net.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media earlier today in Washington before the Canucks face the Capitals at 4:30 tonight, continuing their Eastern road trip. And, you know, we were talking with Donnie and Dolly there in the crossover, Drance, about maybe how Rick Tocchet's communication style has differed from last season. And I mean, you and I used to talk about it all the time, right? Just how open he was, how willing to explain things he was. I did think we got a little throwback Rick Tocchet answer there in response to your question about Nils Höglander and the penalty and just how his perspective on it. That felt like a Rick Tocchet from last year answer, the level of detail he went into and kind of walking you and therefore fans and listeners through exactly what he wanted to see and what he took issue with from Höglander on that play.
Yeah, I thought it was an incredible answer, and I hadn't considered that his primary reaction would be, I want the winger without the stick to put themselves in the more favorable spot on the ice. Like, the problem isn't necessarily the penalty. That can go either way. You know, I don't think it was a soft call because of the extra indiscretion. I think that was obvious to anyone who really knows hockey, right? Like, we all knew that it was the he would have gotten away with one. He wouldn't have gotten away with two. I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. That's not a huge surprise. But for him to focus on what's coachable, right, which is that you shouldn't have been there in the first place. Yeah, I thought that was, you're right. I think a throwback Rick Tocchet answer is a good way to put it. And yeah, look, I thought he was in good spirits today because, again, we had a lengthy chat after the scrum, mostly talking about the wild card slate. But nonetheless, so you know, I think the, yeah, look, we'll see sort of where this goes. There's so much season left. Like, this story, this team could be defined by the next 9 games. I think we all know that, but they won't necessarily be, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's also important to remember, right? This next 9 games, even if you can just stay afloat, even if you end this 9-game stretch 2 points back of the Flames, right? That still keeps your book unwritten. That still gives you the space to get healthy down the stretch and go on a run. And, you know, they should be, whether it's Tocchet, whether it's this team, they shouldn't be hanging their heads. Like, there should be a recognition that this is still a talented group with an opportunity to do something here. Now, it's also a team that could be absolutely detonated in short order for all we know, right? Like, there is a volatility to what comes next that makes, you know, our usual obsession of forecasting a little bit trickier. But, you know, as much as it feels like the we're in like a barbell. This isn't a bell curve anymore. This is a barbell, right? The truth is that extreme outcomes feel very likely for this team one way or the other. There is opportunity here for this team to hang on for another couple weeks and figure it out. And you know, they're going to need like Tocchet's answer. I thought too to my question of how different is this season from your perspective. Where he's like, I need to stay calm. I mean, I thought there was something there, too, in terms of, you know, some self-reflection.
Yeah.
Right? Of how he needs to handle this, a reminder to himself about how he needs to handle this over the sort of next little bit. And, hey, maybe a reminder for Canucks fans, too, and the national media as well. This is going to play out one way or the other. If this team can reverse their fortunes, you know, surely some of this trade talk dies, at least dies down. And so, you know, that things are still in this group's hands, whether the conversation around them reflects it or not.
So looking at tonight's game, as you said, getting hard to forecast. So let's focus just on the immediate future of tonight's game against the Washington Capitals. Right now, they have the second best points percentage in the NHL. They've picked up 56 points in 40 games. And I think we all look at them as probably the most pleasant surprise or most positive surprise across the league so far this year. They're you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Canucks last year. Just at this point of the season, it's okay. They've locked themselves into a playoff spot. Now, how much more are they? Are they just a playoff lock team, or are they a legitimate Stanley Cup contender? Are you buying them as a potential Stanley Cup contender coming out of the East?
The Caps, I believe in pretty significantly. Yep. The complete blue line is a big deal for them. Now, seems like they're dealing with some injuries. Seems like they're dealing with an illness ripping through the group. So we'll see if they don't quite have their legs. But this team is legitimate to me. And look, they've been on something of a PDO bender themselves. There's definitely some analogies, I think, with last season's Canucks, right down to the fact that, you know, forward depth is a big strength of this team, in addition to the efficient finishing. Obviously, we know what Ovechkin can do. Dubois actually maintained a work rate this year, which has been a huge factor for them, and obviously a huge factor in his revitalization. But I mean, I don't know if you saw the goal they scored against the Rangers, the Rangers' latest example of making some team look like the Pep Guardiola Barcelona team of 15 years ago. But that was their fourth line. Like, that was their fourth line. It was like seven straight passes. So, you know, Mangiapane has been on their fourth line for much of the year. They've got guys like Connor McMichael who can absolutely kill you, like kill you dead down lineup with a combination of speed and skill. And Alexi Protas, like the only word for this guy is freak. He's a freak. And that's going to be a lot for the Canucks to handle, given that their defenders that can keep up with him are significantly shorter or smaller than him in stature, and the defenders that are able to contain him with their size are significantly slower. Like, that's he's a matchup nightmare for everybody, but it feels like an especially significant matchup nightmare for a Canucks defensive group that, like, doesn't have the Mario player. You know, like, everyone's either
Balanced
Toad.
All-around guy, yeah.
The balance, their defense is all Toads and Bowsers. So, you know, I do think that there's an element to which Protas is a guy to watch tonight. Looks like he might be elevated to play with Ovechkin, too. So that could be fascinating. I don't think Mirochenko gets in the game, by the way, but he's one of my guys, young Capitals winger. Just an absolute pain in the neck in terms of the way he plays the game. If he's in on the fourth line, that's another one. He's got like an annoying face. Like, he's got some Ville Niemenen to him, too. Like, watching him in the Calder Cup playoffs last year, I was just like, this guy looks so annoying to play against or to root against. So that's another thing for Canucks fans to watch for. And then here's the last thing. Like, the Caps have this complete defensive group. Carberry doesn't usually worry about matchups. They have this edge where they play the exact same way on the road and at home, because they're just not that worried about, you know, you trying to be like, oh, we're going to go after Farivari and Trevor Van Riemsdyk. And they're like, fine, those guys can both skate and defend. Good luck. And I think there's an element to which that's a huge edge, has been a huge edge for them all season and remains. So, look, this is a tough one. And in some ways, this is a tougher one than Thursday night against the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, we know that the Hurricanes' speed gives Vancouver trouble, but that's a game like Carolina will be playing their second back-to-back set in a week.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're going to be playing, I think, is it 5-7? It's definitely 5-8. It might be 5-7 for the Hurricanes when they host the Friday. And, you know, so they're going to be the Canucks are going to be the more rested team, as compressed as their schedule is and as much as they have to travel after tonight's game. And Carolina's already at home waiting for the Leafs tomorrow. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think this might be the toughest matchup remaining on this road trip aside from the Winnipeg game. So fascinated to see what it looks like. Canucks may have caught a break if, you know, there's some virus or what have you going around the Caps room. And the Canucks are going to need to be really sharp and battle ready for a physical game, because this Caps team has a lot of size, a lot of speed, and they come at you in waves with a ton of depth scoring options. So it should be a fun one.
It will be 5-7 for the Hurricanes, by the way, on Friday, and second half of a back-to-back for them. So, yeah.
That's a schedule loss, like straight up. That's a schedule loss. The Canucks could not be bumping into an elite team at a better time on Friday. This is a game where, like, you win this game, or even if you grind out a point in this game, right? You go into that Hurricanes game and it's pretty advantageous, and there's a real chance that you go into Toronto on Hockey Night in Canada, and instead of it being like, oh, the sky is falling, it's like the Canucks come into this having got a point from all three games of their tough road trip. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, opportunity knocks for this team. As much as the sky feels like it's falling, it could just be an acorn.
Okay, quickly before we go to break here, what's your gut say about Elias Pettersson's status for tonight? Rick Tocchet characterized him as game time, said he had to talk to him. What are you thinking?
Well, I would doubt it. I would doubt it. Like, the optional skate featured Pettersson, Lekkerimäki, Hoglander, and Max Sasson. So that's not like that. I mean, that's a run of fringe guys.
Yep.
Like a run of guys who are 50-50 to be in the lineup. The fact that Pettersson was among them, you know, and then on defense, it was Forbert who Tocchet described as a game time decision, Brännström and Brisebois, you know. So it's like a couple, like Forbert and Pettersson, a couple game time decision guys, and some guys that may play or not, right? Like, that was sort of the skate that the Canucks held today. You know, you feel like if Pettersson was going to make his return from injury tonight, he wouldn't have been on the ice. He would have been, even if he is a pure game time decision. So I would lean no, but it's probably like a 45-55
sure.
position.
All right. JanPro, from warehouses to washrooms and everywhere in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit JanPro.ca. We will take a break up next. As he does always on a Wednesday, Jason Bukala will join us from Sportsnet, former director of NHL scouting. Lots to get into with Books. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Jason Bukala will join us momentarily here on the show, of course, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former director of amateur scouting as well. And in fact, he's ready to join us right now. So let's go to the phone lines where, as mentioned, Jason Bukala joins us. Jason, thanks for doing this as always, man. Happy New Year. How's it going?
Happy New Year, fellas. Yeah, it feels like it's been an eternity. I missed you guys on Wednesday. Now, this is my weekly couch session where I get to say what I want when I want and I don't have to pay for it. It's great.
Well, we're glad we can provide that service. And yeah, it's been a while, so we do have a little bit of catching up to do, and I know it's in the rearview mirror a bit now.
We need that therapy style conversation in this market, Books.
No kidding. I know you do.
I know it's in the rearview mirror a little bit now, but speaking of therapy and getting it all out, your perspective, and I'm guessing you could go for, you know, several hours on this, but your perspective on Canada's results at the World Juniors.
Yeah, I really could, but the Coles Notes version is pretty simple, and that is that we weren't prepared enough. You know, right out of the gate, it's curious to me when you select a certain style of coach who definitely wants to play a certain style of game, if you will, and then you park a few Ferraris in the garage and try and turn them into bicycles. You know, it just doesn't work like that. And the way that we game planned and the way that we dealt or we handed out ice time in certain roles was curious. I'm not letting them off the mat. When your number's called in an international event, you have to be the best version of yourself, no matter what you're asked to do. And I don't think that everybody was, for sure. But you know, some alarming things came out of that tournament, guys. The Kazakhstan got relegated, and they had an 11.6 shooting percentage compared to ours, Team Canada, who finished last at like 5.7%. That's an alarming statistic in itself. They did not get goalied as much as people want to lead you to believe. They didn't get to the inside enough, and we didn't play old style Canadian hockey where we would wear down our opponents off the cycle, and you know, they'd be exhausted after 20 seconds and give us some grade A looks. So there's a lot to unpack, but the one thing that I do definitely want to say is that the program of excellence, as we've referred to it for, you know, an eternity now, the world has caught up, guys. And it's, you know, we can roll out there in front of the media and say that the women's game's in good shape, which it is. The para is in good shape, which it is. Potentially the Four Nations might, you know, that's going to be a crapshoot, but the World Juniors is kind of a staple to tell you how the next wave is going for Team Canada. And it's not that we don't have the talent. We don't have the preparation, and we're not prepared, and we're stubborn. So it's time that we check our egos at the door and start to evolve a lot more.
On the from the Canucks perspective, and I think that's all well said, Book says, maybe when you're in town next week, we'll get into it a little bit in more detail.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the situation.
Yes.
But from a Canucks perspective at the tournament, of course, all eyes out here on Tom Volander for Sweden. Another disappointing result for Sweden. But what did you think of Volander's performance?
This is where I'm going to be, unfortunately, Debbie Downer, and buy into some of Drancher's analogies from before the tournament. So mixed bag is the best way I can put it to you. Some good and some really not so good. So he played a ton, first of all. He played on his offside most of the time. He wore a letter. He was part of the leadership group. So the good news is the skating's in place, as we know. There's no issues getting, to pucks ahead of opponents, and generally speaking, moving them on time. But his defending, as the games became harder, high leverage, there was some real... I'll show you next week when I'm in town, because I've got some clips that I cut of Willander, and he didn't arrive on time. He arrived with very little purpose a few times defending, and in the Sweden game specifically, allowed somebody, an opponent, to walk right to the paint and score a goal. There was some good and some not so good. So I'm monitoring that situation. Had to be more engaged physically. Had to take better routes to some pucks defensively. Offensively, he scored a couple of pucks. So I think they're both power play goals, actually. And but his puck movement against the higher end opponents was also average plus. So it wasn't great. He's been better, I have to say.
Yeah, the good thing,
and some of the media voted him to the All-Star team, which means that I'm either a complete jerk or I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think Canucks fans were quite outraged that Axel Sandin Palicka sort of beat him to that honor, and personally, I thought it was pretty clear. That said, my issues, or not issues, but my concerns about Willander have often been so focused on like the puck handling mechanics, specifically like a mechanical issue, and then sort of topping it off, how that also causes him to think the game defensively as opposed to bringing the sort of dynamism I need if you're going to play like top pair or top four, frankly, in the NHL. Like the difference between I'm just trying to think, like the difference between Jalen Chatfield, right, a really nice player, and a guy like an Ekblad, right, is that sort of offensive instinct, even if both of their bread is buttered defensively, as I think the Landers will be. And I did think anyway that like some of the puck handling and some of his aggression looked better. So even though there's still gaps, that he showed improvement in the areas that I was most concerned about, or have been most concerned about with him historically, as like limiting his upside. And that was sort of, I almost came away from the tournament not thinking he'd played great, Books, but just like thinking he's at least shown some growth in the areas that he's generally sort of played in ways that have caused me to be, I think, a bit lower on him than market.
So yeah, on balance, I don't disagree with some of what you're saying there. So the way that I want people to understand that when I'm scouting a tournament like this and I'm seeing teams like, Czechia, Latvia, Kazakhstan, things like that, there's moments in games or moments in, depending on the opponent, that absolutely a player like this with his elite skating ability and generally speaking, average plus for sure, puck management skills, he will shine, and you're going to catch him in a game like that. When I look on the macro, it's okay. This is mostly positive. And then I start mining down on the micro, because what I start doing at this time of year is I start game planning in my mind. Is this kid a candidate to come out of school, and where is he going to jump onto our roster at the end of the year? And if that happens, what's that going to look like? So then when I get down into the micro is when I get hypercritical at this stage of his development. So I don't want people to have the takeaway here and start throwing rocks that I don't think he's a top 4D. I do think he's a top 4D. What I saw in high leverage situations was just that there was a few situations that ended up with the puck in his net. Like Eric Svitenko going to the net backdoor against Latvia. Willander doesn't kill the play on his blue line on time. And then there's a 6'6", 210-pound behemoth going to the net on the far post, and it puts his defense partner under duress, if you understand what I mean. On the tuck against Finland, again, the route and just leaning with my stick, not killing it on the blue line. Like, if you're not going to kill it with your stick, you're going to have to finish the momentum with your body. And so on balance, yeah, there was a ton of positive things. I get it. But what I'm mining down on the micro, I expected more in a couple of really high leverage situations. And that's my rant.
Books, with Sawyer Mineo, you know, sort of arrived at the tournament as kind of a bit player, did seem to like find a way to grow his role and ice time with Team Canada. What impressions did he leave you with? You know, and obviously he's gotten traded to a good team in the WHL, so he'll play with Calgary the rest of the season, no longer sort of being the best guy on a bottom feeder, which I think is good for him in terms of his development in what's sure to be his last major junior season. What impressions did Mineo leave you with at the tournament?
So what impressed me about Mineo was the fact that he basically came out, well, he did. He came out of the press box. He wasn't rostered. And then, of course, the injury to Schaefer occurred. So as soon as you get rostered and you're dealing with the type of injury to a star player, immediately the focus is on you a little bit more for reasons that are out of your control. I thought Mineo, along with Caden Price on the back end for Canada, played to their identity for the most part. I really did. I thought that, you know, there was a few hiccups with the puck, but they all did that. But on balance, he played a simple game. And I had no issues with the way that he managed it. You know, he kept things simple, I guess, is the best way that I can tell you. And that's important to note because you just brought up a good point. He's been traded to Calgary, right? He got traded to Hitmen, I believe. And he is going to now fit into a different type of role there that's going to be more projectable for him at the NHL level. When you're in Seattle and you're on a lower-end major junior team, yeah, it's nice to get power play touches and all those other things on the first unit, but that's not what he's going to do in the NHL, guys. So they've got guys there that will do that, and he's going to be able to evolve further as a two-way D because that's what he is. I have him as a third-pairing guy. I have him as a guy that can just be a steady Eddie, like a 14-minute, 15-minute night guy, I guess, kill penalties. He's not super tall, but, you know, he can play both sides. He can play left side and the right side is a left shot, which is great. And he's willing to bump up against people. So there's lots of positives there. He was fine. He was the least of my concerns on that roster. I'll put it to you that way.
Books, looking at the Canucks, they're in this kind of post-Christmas malaise, it feels like, a little bit here. And, of course, a big part of that is they missed Quinn Hughes for a stretch. He gets back against Montreal, but obviously, you know, his hands all taped up, still dealing with something a little bit. They've been missing Elias Pettersson, and the results have suffered predictably with those two out of the lineup. What have you thought of this stretch of the Canucks? Does it tell us anything about the team, or is it just simply a case of they're just down so many bodies, so many key contributors right now?
Well, they're down bodies, but they're just there's too much noise as well. And it's, you know, we talked about this in length, and the culture that was built up, and it was so positive last year. And then we, at the beginning of the season, as we were making comments about guys that they were missing out of the lineup, whether it be Demko or it didn't matter, pick a body, Hronek going out. They seem to have had this built-in attitude, if you will, that we can at least grind out and overcome some of our opponents. Now, some of those were loser points. I get it. But I have to say, guys, in the last even 10-game segment, we're talking injuries, and I'm going to definitely qualify that as part of the reason. When you have star players in this league, there's not too many teams that can handle it. Trust me on that. You guys know that, too. You can't, you know, look at the Colorado Avalanche at the beginning of the year and look at them now when they start getting bodies back. It just happens that way. But the infrastructure with the group and the pulling the rope in the same direction and the just everything, not great. Like, you know, if I eliminate the loser points, we're like 3-7 in the last 10 games, 27-4, 34 against. You know, goals against is well above 3, and you know, power play and penalty killer in the middle of the pack. I'm starting to get to the point where I'm concerned, and it's not just that they got to get healthy, but just about the whole attitude and makeup of the team. And I know I'm not alone. I know that market's really concerned and up in arms right now, and so they should be.
Yeah, and looking at strictly the on-ice stuff, and, you know, one of the big concerns out here that we hear a lot from fans, and I think it's totally valid, is just about how hard it is for this team to generate offense, scoring chance, shots, you know, a lot of games where they're right around that 20-shot on goal mark.
Yeah.
Why is it? Why have they struggled so much? Even when, and obviously it's magnified when Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson are out, but it's been an issue when they've been in the lineup as well. Why has it been such a struggle for them, Books?
Yeah, good question. And, you know, it happened last year in playoffs too, like after, you know, eventually that started to happen, that they weren't able to generate as much quality, like their second layer wasn't there. You know, I think it's got a lot to do with just energy and game planning and willingness. I honestly do. The more second pushback that you have, maybe third pushback, and then obviously Quinn Hughes, when he's out of the lineup, good or bad, if they're generating 20 shots, he's going to transport the puck, and there's going to be zone entries galore all night long. And when a guy like that's out of the lineup, that's obviously a big hole. Even Pettersson, when he's going well, and he hasn't been the best version of himself. But honestly, I think that they've lost that ability to track fast, get pucks in behind the opponent, and wear them down and create. And it's curious to me, but it is what it is right now. And they gotta break out of the funk, because it's getting late. We're in the back half of the season here, boys, and at the end of January, things are going to be interesting here. They're interesting now, but they have the potential to get very, very interesting if we don't get a little bit more push through.
Well, they do have an opportunity to get really interesting, Books, and the Canucks have Washington tonight, Carolina on Friday, Toronto on Saturday, then they go to Winnipeg. They come back home. They've got the Kings. They've
LA,
got
the Oilers. Yeah.
They've got Washington again. They've got LA. And that's just in their next 9 games. And yet, for all of that, you know, tied with the Flames by points, but hold the tiebreaker and have a better point percentage for the second wild card as we sit today. Are you buying that a Flames or a Blues or a Utah Hockey Club, unnamed, have the juice to actually pass this team and bump them from a playoff spot over the balance of the season?
Not if the Vancouver Canucks are the best version of themselves. No way. I don't believe that for a second. I think that I'm looking inward here. I'm not even looking outward. Everything that you just said right there is the reality, but I'm not even looking at that for this segment of games, if you will. I'm looking inward to get us to, in a weird kind of way, guys, when you're down a few men and your schedule gets really, really hard, like that's a gauntlet. Those teams you just read out right there, like, this is going to be a test, right? And when you get into that type of a schedule, sometimes teams, they dummy things down and everything just becomes a little bit more simple and they're harder in certain areas and they get positive results. And maybe that's exactly, maybe this is the schedule in a weird kind of way coming up that the Vancouver Canucks need. Now, losing the Montreal Canadiens out of the gate doesn't help. You know, like that's obviously the other night that was hopefully going to be 2 points, and you're again, you know, some ugly habits reared their ugly head there. But this is going to be a heavy lift. There's no question about it. But I'm looking inward. Here's the thing: don't expect this group in that 9-game segment or whatever to go 7-2. If you can come out of this 5-4, I would call that a positive result. 4-4-1, that would be a positive result. That's how good the opponents are. So you have to be realistic in here too. You can't keep throwing things at the team. You have to be realistic in this stretch of games.
What do you make of all the Miller, Pettersson, frou-frou that, you know, surfaces every 48 hours? Every 48 hours, there's new competing insider reports about the Canucks listening or potentially trading one of or both of their star centermen. I mean, what do you make of all this noise, Books?
I hate it. I mean, I know that we're in the business of reporting on teams, and they've invited this chaos to a degree, right? Like, there's at the beginning of the year, maybe you guys can confirm this for me, but I don't believe everything I hear. But at the beginning of the year, I heard that, you know, even the coaches were asking certain parts of the leadership group to challenge PD to be better, you know, to be harder. And, you know, just instead of the coaches always doing it, like, have that internal type of pressure from your teammates. This has obviously been going on for a long time. I don't like that everybody has to talk about it every couple of days. It's not good for the team. But they have invited, this is pro sports. You know, I am a little bit conflicted, because if you're going to make gazillions of dollars to play a game, you know, you got to get over it. Like, you think the brain surgeon who's looks up and he sees that his resident that he doesn't really like, who's in that day, is going to help him out, he's not going to be the best version of himself that day? Like, come on. It doesn't work like that. The real world is, I don't care, eliminate the noise. You're getting paid a hefty amount of money. Families are paying a ton of dough to come watch you play, and they're invested in you guys. Just be the best version of yourself and figure it out. And honestly, I don't want to talk about it. I just want you guys to prove it to me. And I know that sounds simplistic, but that's exactly where I'm at. I don't care that you guys don't like each other. I really don't. Scotty Bowman won how many Stanley Cups? You'd be hard-pressed to find a dressing room that was leaning his way that they love them, you know, but they won Stanley Cup. It's just the way it is. And I don't know. You guys must get nauseated over it because I'm sure you can't escape it.
Yeah. And it's fascinating too, because it feels like it kind of started with the discussion around Elias Pettersson and JT Miller and their relationship. And that is, it's so nebulous. It's so hard to get any sort of concrete details or know exactly what's going on there, that it's just going around in circles after a while. But then you hear this constant reporting that the team's listening and they're gauging the market, and this is what they would want if they were going to move one, and they're serious, trust me, they're serious about considering doing it. And I do wonder how much of it is the relationship and how much of it just comes down to the play of these guys on the ice, right? Like, I almost wonder if the relationship thing, the rift, is a sideshow, and maybe the bigger picture here is the team sold that this is the 1-2 punch they want to win a Stanley Cup. I think you still want to roll with that, but I guess I'm wondering if this now has more to do with the fact that both guys have underperformed this season, or and the rift is just a distraction, than maybe we thought originally.
Yeah, I think that's a really good talking point. So this is progressive. I think that you're right. I honestly do. I think that they're taking pause and they're taking a look at this, and they're asking themselves specifically about Pettersson, they want more out of him. This coach wants more out of him, but he is what he is personality-wise. So you're going to have to come up with the decision whether or not it's similar to the Toronto market with Mitch Marner. You know, like Mitch Marner, he's had a fantastic regular season. He's in a contract year. I get it. But come playoff time, or there's been tons of times where the market and the coaches have been looking at him saying, we need more out of you. And sometimes you are what you are, and maybe you got to surround him differently. Maybe there's got to be a different leadership type of a scenario. Here's the one thing that stands out for me, that Quinn Hughes isn't going to be the guy who gets in the middle of JT Miller and Pettersson if there's something going on. I don't think. Maybe he is. Maybe I'm misreading it. But they don't have like an alpha dog that's going to – like Miller is that guy. So when he's in a bad mood, everybody knows it. And if he's really in a bad mood towards one of the players, then I'm sure they know it then too. So that's when, as management, I just look at the play. I don't care about the rest of that stuff. You guys are grown men. You're not playing good enough. That's the bottom line. And can we win with you? And that's a conversation. And then when Patrick comes out in the media and says, you know, what he said last week in that press conference or in an article, that he's basically all ears and nothing's off the table. That was my take, at least, that, you know, we don't want to do anything necessarily, but we are listening. We've got to make this team better. And it's a lot different this year than it was last year. And you have to look inward and ask yourself why, outside of just how the kids are playing or how the players are playing, pardon me. I just wish they kept everything under wraps a little bit better.
Last one for you here, Books. Canucks defensive prospect Elias Pettersson, so the Abbotsford Elias Pettersson on the blue line. He was named an AHL All-Star today, and, you know, first full season in the AHL, turns 21 in February, gets the nod. Obviously a good accomplishment for him in his first pro North American season. What can you tell us about his development and how he's tracking in Abbotsford this year?
Well, it's a good news story, isn't it? So you guys know how much I like this guy for his old school type of approach to things. He's adjusted very well. He's a North American style defenseman. He's got some nasty to him. He's got size. He's got range. Anything that we get out of him offensively in the NHL is going to be a bonus. But he's a really confident human being, and he's nasty to play against. His speed is good. His read and react is fine. He manages the game within his skill set, and he pushes back physically, and I love that. When the games get hard around the net, their net, he's a piece of work, and I appreciate that in players.
Books, appreciate it. Thank you as always. Great stuff, man, and we'll chat next week.
We definitely will, in person.
In person, in person. Yeah. Now, yeah, I have bad news. I believe Drance is going to be out of town. So it's just me. I know.
So, well, hold on a second. How do you even know that's bad news? We haven't even...
That's a great point. That is a great point, Books.
What days are you in town, Books? Let's make a plan. What days are you in town, bud?
Buddy, I'm arriving Thursday for the LA game, and I'm doing the West Coast till Monday.
Yeah, that's great. So, okay, so I'm back. I'm back Friday night. So,
all right, there we go.
We'll figure something out.
We definitely will.
We got it sorted out. I'm glad.
No, the boss is behind the scenes. Lena will make the plans. We'll just follow her lead. We'll go from there. It's all good.
Sounds good. All right. Looking forward to it, Books. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, guys. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, that is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage. And of course,
cutting me out of the plan.
Forward direct. No, Jamie. I was trying to let him know so he wasn't crushed when he got here next week.
A2, Jamie. A2.
It's not like I did it behind your back. It's not like I texted Books. I was like, hey, don't worry about Drats. Yeah.
No, you're right. You did it to my face, and that's why it really hurts.
I think so little of you, but I didn't even have to hide it from you. I just did it right to your face. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you guys will cross over in town next week. All right, we'll take a break. Final segment coming up. We'll do the whiteboard for today here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.